pase. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, August 30th, 2018. Dwayne Mullins with myself, Kevin Larame, joining us on the line to talk about Clint Dempsey's retirement. The one and only sounder at heart, Dave Clark. Dave, how are you doing today?
It's a fine day.
That's good to hear, Dave. I'm curious. We'll start with a simple one. Obviously, we had to book you on when we heard about Clint Dempsey announcing his retirement to talk about the legacy of Dempsey as the player. Let's just start with that. What is his legacy in this league and for the city that you're in?
Well, I think those are kind of two different questions. The legacy for the league, it's pretty clear. Whether it was with the New England Revolution during their attempt to become the Buffalo Bills with all their success except for MLS Cups. Clint Dempsey was a part of that and kind of launched New England onto their success. They did succeed without him, and they sold him for what was a really big number at the time and remains a really big number for the league. So, you know, when you go back that far, when you go back 15 years and you have this player like that who goes on to become an icon at Fulham and a U.S. national team icon, it's pretty clear that the player is more than just popular. He is a mythical figure that we never, until that point, Americans never assumed that a player could score goals outside of the United States. Essentially, they'd get a couple, but they wouldn't be... they wouldn't be able to dominate, and Clint Dempsey was able to dominate. 1 year being even the, I guess it was the fourth highest scorer in England at the time. That's impressive. And then what happens when he returned to Seattle is also something that people can't forget about, because when he returned to Seattle, yes, there were shenanigans on how he got here, but the league had advanced to such a point where a player who was in his prime, remember it was 6 years ago, he was only 29, could say, I want to come back. I want to come back with a really big number for MLS. And I have the leverage to say that there are only three places that I would accept. And as you and I know, those three places were Toronto, the Los Angeles Galaxy, not really a surprise, and the Seattle Sounders. And that two of those teams were expansion sides that essentially redefined how Canada and the United States could embrace soccer. I think that's part of Clint Dempsey's history. That's part of his legacy, is that he was so intrigued by the popularity of the sport in the United States that it had become much more than it was. That he wanted to come back. He had the leverage to say he'd only go to certain places. And those places were ones that were defined by passion in the stadium, not necessarily places that could make him the most money off the field, like, say, New York or Chicago. Though in most American sports, those would be much more appealing than Seattle and Toronto. So it's a great legacy. His final two-thirds of a season here was pretty pedestrian. Hopefully that doesn't overshadow people in the short term, because what he did with the Seattle Sounders was help them to return to MLS Cup final, win a supporter shield, win an Open Cup, all within a short period of time.
I'll jump in for Dwayne. Dave, when I'm thinking of Clint Dempsey, yes, you mentioned this year, the two-thirds of the season. What did you think motivated Clint Dempsey to retire mid-season and not wait till the end of the season? Was it because he was worried maybe about the playing time he was going to get, or maybe he just hit the wall and figured now it's as good a time as any?
With his injuries and form, he got to a place where maybe he was the 14th or 15th best player on a team. And Seattle has seen this before. the two greatest baseball players to ever grace the field here in Seattle also walked away in the middle of their final seasons. So it's not necessarily a surprise to people in Seattle, because I think we're starting to expect it. Ichiro Suzuki walked away earlier this year because he wasn't good enough to be a regular player anymore. And Clint Dempsey was at the point where he wasn't going to be a starter. And great players have enormous egos. And there comes a point where, does it make sense for them to work their ass off to get 10 to 15 minutes a game? Maybe, on the rare times that they're healthy. And I think that's what kind of motivated him to make this decision. He was in the last time he was in the 18, he did not appear in the game. Instead, it was a 22-year-old Alex Roldan that was the final sub. And I think that kind of is an indicator to a veteran that their time is done. And there's good fishing to be had at this time of year. So why struggle on the training pitch for a couple of minutes when you can find a new fishing hole? And I think that goes a lot with what Clint Dempsey's personality is.
Yeah, the good fly fishing, especially in the Pacific Northwest right now. But when we're looking at the Seattle Sounders right now, they're on a great run, and Alonso's coming back from injury as well and getting this team ready for the playoff. As great as is the Clint Dempsey retirement, and now there's going to be talk of legacy, there's going to be talk of maybe not retiring his number, but honoring the player. Could that be a distraction from the great run Seattle's on right now?
I don't know. Enough of this roster dealt with the distraction of Clint Dempsey missing games due to a heart condition and then went on to win MLS Cup. Last year, they dealt with the distraction of Osvaldo Alonso basically missing all of the playoffs. Hopefully he doesn't hear that and fact check me. I think it was the 2017 season that playoffs that he missed. They've dealt with major distractions before. They've fired a coach and got better. They've lacked Clint Dempsey for a heart issue. Osvaldo Alonso faded dramatically for several years, or for many months, and they've managed to focus anyway. For all the criticism that Brian Schmetzer gets about not being a tactical coach, if there's one thing that he does very well, it's that he manages personalities, motivation, and effort. And that's what is working for Seattle right now. They're still the team that at preseason was picked to be a top five team in the league, and now they're actually playing like it. And if you look at the whole season, minus the first three games, which all had red cards in them, including one to Clint Dempsey, they're earning 1.73 points a game. You know, when you just drop the first three of the season. If you're doing that over, quick math, 22 games, that's a really good squad. That's a good enough team to be first in the West. And that's where people predicted them at the beginning of the year. And it seems like those predictions are coming true.
Well, maybe you'll go back for a third straight year. I don't think you'll have the same opponent this year, but maybe Kevin and I will talk about that after. Dave, when you think about Clint Dempsey, is he a Fulham player or is he a Seattle Sounder in most people's minds, do you think?
He's an American. I for all of Clint Dempsey's weight and power here, for his fame and success in Fulham, he'll just go down as being an American soccer player. I think particularly with the way that he moved between four clubs, was a legend at three of them. It's his time with the United States that made him a name brand. It's his time with the United States that got him endorsements that feature, you know, that made us learn how to spell Nacogdoches. That's because he's an American soccer player. And as an American soccer player, he traveled around the country and around the world and was popular for that beyond anything he ever did as a Sounder, as a revolution with Fulham or with Tottenham.
Fair enough. Let's talk a little bit about what his legacy in the city is. You touched on his Americanism, you touched on his general career there, but I'm curious, you know, Seattle's a pretty big sports city. where did this fit? What his announcement that he was retiring, how did it fit into the local narrative this week?
Well, we've got the final Seahawks preseason game. The Mariners went on a recent slide to fall out of playoff contention. And the UW Huskies, which is a major college football team that's in town and was in the national semifinals 2 years ago, opened this weekend. So it was a crowded sports landscape, and yet still, Clint Dempsey's retirement led off the top of the hour news updates. It got people on the air talking about the Seattle Sounders more than just the pre-scheduled, pre-booked kind of destination radio that is essentially the best that you can get for a multi-sport town. It was the topic on radio. It was, I sell beer for a living, walk into a lot of bars, and it was, normally I have to talk soccer to people. They won't bring it up because they're tired of me. But yesterday they were the ones, dude, did you hear about Dempsey? And I'm like, well, yes, I did hear about Dempsey. But, you know, it made me realize that it was the type of story that broke through a crowded sports landscape, and it was the type of story that got a common sports fan to think about the Sounders if just for a few hours.
Now, Dave, we're going in the last stretch of the 2018 season. Seattle is one of the hottest teams in the league right now. What's the ceiling for the Sounders in 2018, knowing that for 2016 and 2017 they made it to the MLS Cup? A lot of games, a long, long season for two back-to-back seasons. Is this going to hurt them, or have they gone through the jitters at the beginning of the season and now they're good to go for the rest of the stretch?
Well, I think they've recovered, whether it's fitness or health, from what happened in the early season for the most part. As Canadian soccer media, you understand, you've seen what happened with Toronto and the wave of injuries. I would say some would argue this, but I think Seattle went through more and worse injuries. They were without Clint Dempsey. They were without Osvaldo Alonso. They were without Ramon Torres. They missed Kelvin Weirdom, Gustav Svensson. They missed Victor Rodriguez and still miss him. They missed Jordan Morris. If you go over those starting lineups, they missed Nuhu Tolo. Like, if you go over the starting lineups from MLS Cup and the guys that were still eligible, the only one that missed, the only three guys missed insignificant games, and they were the core of the defense: Christian Roldan, Chad Marshall, and Stephen Fry. And when you think of what makes the Seattle Sounders successful, it's a defense that doesn't give up goals. And so that's why their defense stayed incredible, is the core of the defense remained healthy. Now, outside of Victor Rodriguez and Jordan Morris, the core of the attack is healthy. They have Nico Ladero back and playing very well, and they added Raul Ruiz Diaz. When you talk about what's the peak for what Seattle can do, they can host an MLS Cup. The top five teams in the West will be better than all but three teams in the East at the end of the season. And so it's obvious one of those teams won't make the Eastern Conference Final, and maybe two of them bomb out. And if that's the case, Seattle has the opportunity, not even by continuing this form, but just by going 500 for the rest of the season, they have the opportunity to host an MLS Cup.
Fair enough. As I said, it won't be the same place this year. I'm pretty sure of that. Dave, I'm curious whether you can put your finger on any reason why Seattle struggled to start their last couple seasons. I mean, obviously they've closed very well, and they're a very good team. So what is it at the start? Or has it just been a bunch of things?
It's a bunch of things. Obafemi Martins abandoned them a week before the season started, the year they won MLS Cup. Jordan Morris went down in the first CONCACAF Champions League, and they were essentially a three-man attack that lost Jordan Morris to injury and then Clint Dempsey to age to start this season. And Garth Lagerwey waited way too long to replace scoring element. So that helped them struggle. And then, obviously, the wave of injuries as Portland and Columbus learned when they went to MLS Cup, and as Toronto and Seattle have learned when they went to back-to-back MLS Cups while competing in the Champions League, it's exhausting. And to play 48 to 52 games in a season and essentially only have 6 weeks off it's a burden, and there's no way to make it easier. And it's probably part of why the league has a little bit of parity. It's definitely why we haven't seen dynasty really since the 34-game season started.
Dave, to finish the interview, I'm going to ask you this question. We're talking about a team that's on form, a team that's really, really hot right now. If you had to choose one Seattle player as their MVP, as their most valuable player, as the key player down the stretch, who would it be?
Ooh, you're going to tell me one, but I'm going to go two, and that's because I think they're both in the they should both be in the awards conversation. Stephen Fry, the former TFC player, has basically become Nick Raimondo in that he is maybe never going to win the Keeper of the Year, but he's always going to be in that conversation, at least now with Seattle over the past four seasons. This is his best by far. And Tim Melia isn't standing on his head this season. There's no one where you can look at their numbers and think they're the clear and obvious choice. So for me, Stephen Fry is a potential Keeper of the Year. He commands a defense that does incredibly well. And the other one that I would mention is I like to refer to him as Chad Marshall of the Chad Marshall of the Year Award. He's won Defensive Player of the Year, or Defender of the Year, three times already. I think this year not only should he win this fourth, but he should the award should be named after him, not waiting until he retires, but the award should be named after him. No other player has been as strong defensively over more than a decade than Chad Marshall. And what he does for this team, he can start the attack because when he makes a clearance, it's not just a randomly punted ball. It's one that usually lands at the feet of the Sounders. He is incredible in the air. His interception rate is unquestionable. There are better athletes on back lines throughout the league, but what Chad Marshall does is read the game better than anybody else. And it doesn't matter if the attacker is small. Doesn't matter if they're big. A team with Chad Marshall in defense will never give up more than one goal. And when you look at what Seattle has done this year, even their losses, that beginning of the season that I mentioned, were essentially 3-1-0 losses. And that's a sign that the attack was awful, not that the team was awful. They have recovered from that, and the only reason they have any sort of success is Stephen Fry and Chad Marshall.
Dave Clark, the original Sounder at Heart, thank you very much for your time today, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
We'll take a short break and come back with some TFC and Wednesday night recap talk.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today, thanks to Dave Clark. You can follow Dave Clark's work at SounderAtHeart.com. Now, Dwayne, it's time to talk about last night. Time to talk about Portland 2, Toronto 0.
You know, I said going into this stretch of four games where TFC has three of them at home that if they had 9 points that I'd still consider them part of the conversation. So I don't think last night changed that. But what I will say about last night is that the difference, well, there's a lot of differences, but one of the big things that stuck out to me is that last year they could have went and won a game like that. They did go in and win games like that, whereas last night it just never seemed likely. So even if they do pull themselves back in the playoff race, it's becoming harder and harder. Beggars belief, really, to argue that this is anywhere close to the same team. And there's just no cohesion. There's no, I wouldn't say there's no fight, because there's a fight, obviously. But when things start to go wrong, like they've gone for this team this year, they pile on to each other, right? And the fact that they can't compete going across the, you know, and it's very difficult. You look historically, any team that flies, you know, does a midweek game after playing at home on the weekend, flies across the continent, east to west, they rarely win. But again, the difference between this year's team and last year's team, this difference anyway, is that they just don't compete in those games anymore. There was no hope going into it that they would succeed in that. So, yeah, here we go.
And now Toronto has to travel back to Toronto to play LAFC on Saturday evening. A busy, busy stretch. Three games in the famous 8 days. They are going to need a win against LAFC, don't they?
Yeah, they got to win their home games. If they win all their home remaining home games, there's five, then, you know, maybe they're in with a shout for the sixth spot. But again, that what that will mean is that they have to travel to travel somewhere in the playoffs, even if they squeak in and win that road game. And I, you know, did you see anything last night that suggests to you that they can travel on the road and win a road game? No, I just don't.
For some reason, and I still don't get it, I've been following soccer for a long time and following sports as a whole for a long time. The ball is round. The pitch is similar. Why is road games so different than home games? Is it the mentality? I know it's a subject we should maybe keep for the off season and make a big research and figure out why. And talk to many different people. Why is road games so difficult? But even home games sometimes can be difficult. Just ask DC United losing 2-0 at home against Philly, a direct opponent in the playoff race. Philadelphia really making sure that DC is going to have a tough time catching them, and even helping the Impact at the same time by making sure DC doesn't have that 3 point. Now, DC were red hot there 2 weeks ago, won 3 games in 1 week, and now it's 2 straight defeats. And time can be running out for DC. Still has some game in hands, but Philadelphia with the big result on the road, which is different than Toronto.
Where are points on the board?
In the pocket.
They're in the pocket.
It's true.
Right? Games in hand don't matter if you don't win them. And DC, now that's the problem. There's two sides to that coin. Yeah, you got all the games in hand, but it means you're playing a condensed schedule. And they've left it really late. And that was a huge win for Philadelphia. 6 points in 4 days to completely change the look of that race. And now if you're a Union fan, you're probably looking up at Columbus more than you're looking down right now.
Only 1 point behind Columbus. Right now, the standings as of last night, the Red Bulls with their victory against Houston 1-0. Has taken the top of the Eastern Conference, but Atlanta has one game in hand. So 55 points for the Red Bulls, 54 for Atlanta in second. Then you have a small gap to NYCFC with 26 game played, 48 points. Then Columbus, another gap, 8 points. Columbus got 40, and Philly is now in the conversation with Columbus to be mid-playoff and maybe hosting a game, maybe not, it depends, but hosting maybe the sixth seed, which could be possible, hosting the fifth seed, sorry. So you never know, and Philly has that maybe a home game as well, the wildcard game, maybe at home if they overtake Columbus. The question is, there is even a small gap below Montreal. Montreal 6 points behind Philly at six, and then you have New England 4 points behind, and then DC 2 points behind that. So there's still 6 points behind Montreal and DC, and Montreal and Toronto as well. Will one of those two, for some reason, we keep forgetting New England, and maybe it's because New England. But can DC or Toronto turn things around now and bridge that 6 point gap?
Well, it's only 6 points, so it is possible. But as I said, yeah, I mean, I think that's your race right there, those four teams. And increasingly, you know, if Montreal gets maybe, what do you think, 42 or 43 might be what it takes. So that's, what, 3 wins for Montreal? So it's becoming increasingly less, you know, arguable that these teams can get in. As you said, you know, Philly did Montreal a huge favor last night by that win. I think it probably knocked their playoff percentage up quite a bit to get that game in hand off of the board for DC United, but can they catch? I don't know. This is like a, you know, it's like crabs in the bucket. Like every time teams get up, they're just pulling them back down into the mix. It's, and I increasingly can't figure out what they're even hoping for. Like if you're TFC, maybe you don't even want to go on a playoff run because you're not probably going to win MLS Cup this year, even if you make it in, because there's just something wrong. And if you've won, instead of going on, you know, even if they play a month longer, that's just a month that you don't have to recover. I suspect that if you're TFC, you might be starting to think that 4 months off isn't the worst idea, and then you can start fresh next year with the CCL run, and it's less, you know, troublesome on your body, less troublesome on your rest, and they'd have to consider themselves to be among the favorites to go deep again next year. They just put this year behind them, so I don't even know if I want them to make the playoffs. Of course I do, but
yeah, of course. But that's, if you're going to make the playoff and bow in the first round, what's the point, right? Okay, the game's not going to be at home. So it's not like you can say, oh, we have a lot of revenue coming from now. It's not that. It's a trip. It's a charter plane. It's actually going to cost you more than you going to make in that game. But there's maybe a small argument to what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you fly to New York City and play one game and you're out 3 days after the season ends, right? Like, and that's the thing, too. If TFC does make the playoffs, or Montreal for that matter, it's probably going to come down to the last week, and there's probably going to be a lot of effort put forward into that, you know, Sunday game when everything's going on, and they're going to get a big win, and they're going to be emotionally up, but then immediately have to turn it around 4 days later. It's cruel, the MLS playoffs, when it comes to that. It's
then
like
go,
baseball, the same deal, right? Like, you don't boom, one game, it's gone.
Speaking of baseball, that's where you go to play. The sixth seed is probably moving to Yankee Stadium to play that game on that very big futsal pitch or that very small soccer pitch. It's a question of perspective, but it'll be interesting. Before we wrap the show up today, Dwayne, we've talked about Clint Dempsey's retirement today, and I don't know if you followed the testimonial game of Bastian Schweinsteiger in Munich. This felt like a retirement game too. Of course, I was expecting this. First half plays as a Chicago Fire player, then you see him walking around the tunnel and being handed a Munich kit. Goes to gets changed, and then he goes and scores a goal too. That was I don't know how much the keeper of Chicago actually tried to save that ball. He didn't move on it, but this really felt like a retirement game for Bastian as well.
I'm sure Fire fans are loving his retirement journey right now. It's so silly they played that game. And if you're going to play that, you played in the preseason.
In the middle of a playoff run, because they're not eliminated yet, technically. Officially, they're not. But we all know that they're not going to make the playoffs. But if you're a Chicago fan, you're like, why? Why travel the entire squad, your A squad, all the way to Munich, to Allianz Arena, for a picture operation, for a photo op, for having Bastian with the Chicago Fire kit in front of 17 trophies that you're never going to win? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Quickly, before we say goodbye, Dave was talking about Stefan Fry, and I just had to look it up to remember who exactly TFC got in that trade. Skylar Thomas, who's currently for the Charleston Battery. So great trade there, TFC, great trade.
Great trade. One of the best keepers in the league versus a USL player. Speaking of USL, our friend Jeff Rutter made a great article on The Athletic. If you're a subscriber, I suggest you take a look at it. It talks about the actual problems of the USL, the lack of union, the lack of a players union for the USL, the disparity of pay, the disparity of treatment of the players, and that maybe is a conversation to have in the short term, because there is a big difference when you look at top teams in USL and bottom teams in USL, the advent of USL D3, there's a lot, I don't want to say problems, but there's a lot of lack of consistency in the pay scale, in the treatment of players in the USL, and that is going to be an issue going forward.
Yeah, well, no, it's the disparity, right? And I think they're trying to address that with the D3 a little bit, but you're still going to have that, you know, you're still going to have your Cincinnati won't be there anymore, but there's always going to be that next Cincinnati that jumps up and sort of tries to go and be a different level, and then you have, well, I mean, off the top of Rochester, basically trying to drop down, right? It's an extreme. It's a league of extremes, and I don't know quite what the answer is, because some of those markets just aren't, maybe that's just it, that they're just not markets that are big enough or can support the game in any level. And having that level of D2 and D3, it might address it a little bit. But I guess you're getting paid in glory, right? And that's all you can afford is the glory. It's not much glory. Yeah. It's USL. But.
And if you haven't listened to the latest Two Solitude Soccer podcast on our Patreon feed for patrons only, $2 a month will give you access to the full exclusive interview with Steven Sandor. And there's an interesting quote that he mentioned that actually relates to this. USL players don't have insurance included in their contract. So for them to pay for an insurance in case they get injured and for them to have medical care, not having to pay up $45,000 of hospital bill, they have to pay a insurance premium of about $10,000 to $15,000 a year. And if you're making $35,000 to $40,000before taxes, guess what? You're not left with a lot after you pay that insurance premium. So for the Canadian Premier League, this might be a blessing in disguise, because while here in Canada, it's not going to be the case, and you will have the insurance probably included in your Canadian Premier League contract.
Yeah, well, you know, OHIP too, or not OHIP, depends where you are, right? Like the free medical care is absolutely going to be an advantage for the Canadian Premier League to attract some of those mid-level Americans, which I keep saying this to people that listen, that there's, for as much as these Canadian tryouts are happening right now, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be choosing between the USL and the Canadian Premier League and might choose to come up here for the adventure, for the a little bit more money and for the free healthcare, because that's going to be something that I think is going to be beneficial to this league. And that's where it's going to start. It's going to start at a USL kind of level, and we grow up from there.
As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larame. We'll be back tomorrow with a preview of the weekend's game in MLS and in the Premier League and around the world of football, but with a soccer perspective. And as always, until next time, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.